trade war, schmade war, right? In New York, I'm Andy Euler in for David Brancaccio. There are lots of ways the U.S. trade war with China could play out. Economists generally think if it escalates with more tariffs, that could hurt the American economy. The International Monetary Fund just released a study that looks at a few different scenarios, the ways tariffs could get even higher, or what happens if we reach a deal. Thankfully, Jonty Bloom of the BBC is all over this and here to break it down. Jonty, good morning.
Good morning, Andy.
So President Trump loves to talk about cutting down America's trade deficit with China, China buying more stuff of ours and the U.S. buying less of the Chinese. But this report suggests GDP would fall under that plan, too. How does that work?
Many American firms are very dependent on Chinese components. And if you came to a trade deal in which you wanted to boost American exports to China, well, agricultural states and mining states would do quite well. But the other side of that is restricting some Chinese imports into America, and lots of sophisticated American firms, very profitable ones, would find it very difficult to replace those components. And they'd actually have to bring them in from somewhere else. So you might cut your trade deficit with China, but you would increase it with other sophisticated countries, and those firms would take a hit in the process, and therefore the American economy would as well.
And so, again, it's sort of a picking and choosing of winners and losers with this sort of any sort of deal that was made, yeah?
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, you can look at it state by state. In most scenarios, it is the poorest states that suffer most.
Jonty Bloom covers business at the BBC. Thank you so much for doing this.
A pleasure.
Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 1 to 2 tenths of percent range, with the Dow future down 35 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is up at 1.97%. 25 years ago today, a company called Kadabra, as in Abracadabra, incorporated up in Washington State. It would sell books, maybe a few other things. A few months later, it would change its name to Amazon. A quarter century later, Amazon is the world's largest retailer. It's where a lot of us go first to buy stuff, and it's worth almost $1 trillion, with side businesses that stretch across many industries. Marketplace's Ben Bradford offers this brief look at how it got started.
Amazon opened as an online bookstore in 1995, and 2 years later, it still had to convince people to try online shopping.
The more books you order from Amazon.com, the more they get to know you, and they make personal recommendations.
It's not scary, and it's very, very fast.
By 1999, Amazon had gone public, was selling music, and allowing third parties to offer almost anything on its site. Brad Stone, the author of The Everything Store, says Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos always intended to sell more than books.
It was kind of a proof of concept. Could you hang a shingle on this new thing called the World Wide Web? And when the model worked, he pressed the accelerator down to the floor,
helping usher in the age of e-commerce. Not only do most product searches now begin on Amazon, but the company produces everything from voice assistants to drones to movies, making Bezos the world's richest man, while thousands of brick-and-mortar stores have closed around the U.S. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
Major League Baseball's All-Star Game is Tuesday at the halfway point in the season. League officials know viewership and game attendance are down in a lot of markets, so they changed the rules of how players get voted into the All-Star Game this year, and fans seem to dig it. But baseball still isn't dominating the headlines like the NFL or NBA. Jason Stark covers baseball for The Athletic. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what does the audience look like for the All-Star Game on a Tuesday after a major holiday?
The audience for the game obviously isn't what it used to be, but here's what might surprise you. The audience for the Home Run Derby is shockingly massive. And I'm told it's the most watched baseball event of the summer on ESPN. It can even outrate the early postseason games.
It feels like other leagues are extending their seasons, the NBA draft, things like that. Does baseball have an analog?
really the winter meetings in December should be the equivalent of those events that you're talking about, the draft and free agency. But that's turned into a week where almost nothing happens. And I think that's why you're hearing calls for off-season trade deadline, maybe a free agent signing deadline that week. The baseball off-season used to be the best in sports. Now I think the other sports off-seasons have become significantly more interesting.
Do we have a sense, can we quantify just basically how much money baseball is losing because they're not a part of this sort of off-season conversation like the NBA is, like the NFL is?
The cash register is still ringing in Major League Baseball. They're in the neighborhood of being an $11 billion industry now. So, you know, I think about this all the time. Compare NBA free agency to baseball free agency. The Nets go out and sign Durant and Irving. Even though Durant's not going to play, their fans know on the first day of free agency, their team looks radically different. They have the entire offseason to go out and buy tickets. Versus the two biggest free agents in baseball are Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. The whole offseason goes by. Neither of them signs. They sign during spring training. There's no selling season for that. It's so much harder to generate season ticket increases and increased revenue because of the way the offseason unfolds. So there's obviously a cost. I just don't know that anybody's ever analyzed that cost.
Jason Stark writes about baseball for the sports website The Athletic. Jason, thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. Thanks, Andy.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Miguel Contreras. Our engineer is Brian Allison. I'm Andy Euler with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.